97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Welcome back for another hour of the Mark Reardon Show. I'm Ryan Recker filling in at Ryan Recker. If you want to look me up on Twitter, Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook. Again, you guys put together a fantastic lineup of guests. Joining us now is White House correspondent for the Washington Times, Shef Mordach. Thank you for coming on again today.
For having me, Ryan. Always enjoy it.
So where do we start? We can talk about the news of President Trump's health. And we just talked to a doctor, I would say 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago, Dr. Anthony Sohn, and kind of discussed what was going on, what happens when the blood pools down and to the ankle, you wear the compression socks, but things are going to be okay. How do you think this story is being handled so far?
So far, it's being handled about as well as the White House can handle it. I mean, as soon as this came up, they released information from his doctor. They put out a statement. Caroline addressed it off the bat at the press briefing today. She got ahead of it before she started getting questions about it. And if you notice, for the 40 minutes that followed, there was maybe one question about it because she got ahead of it with forthright information. And obviously we can contrast that to the most obvious thing, which is how the previous administration was so sketchy with Joe Biden's health.
Oh, absolutely. They hid him away. In fact, I don't even know if they did much in the way of press conferences that would even give you an opportunity to answer sometimes. But so getting ahead of it, that's always a good thing. And as a person of the media and understand how news can travel quickly, what do you think the sweet spot is? Do you think that once it's found, get the news out there immediately? Or do you think when it comes to the health of the president of the United States, that they should be proactive in some ways, releasing the information before it's caught by a photographer?
I think they should have been proactive. I think being caught by the photographer kind of pushed them into a bit of a panic mode to get things out there and then started to react to it. They probably should. But once it was caught, they certainly moved to be proactive and get that information out there.
Yeah. You know, I wondered, I thought, are they going to pay more attention to Trump's ankles than they did Joe Biden's cognitive decline for all those years? I wondered how much emphasis they were going to put on this when it comes to news coverage and how much importance I thought they would put on this. But it sounds like the coverage is pretty appropriately contained to where you think it should be.
So far, that's what I've seen. But keep in mind, we've only known this for, what, 2 hours, 3 hours now? Give it time to go through the cycle. Give time for people to construct the narrative. Give time for people to raise questions. And then we'll see what the coverage is. But to me, what tells me that the White House did a good job handling it is how Caroline came out. She gave us all the details. They released the letter. And there wasn't much left in that briefing room for people to ask about, which is why my opinion is you can always tell how well the White House is covering any White House, how they're doing with messaging based on the questions that you get in the briefing room. And it didn't seem like this generated a lot of curiosity in the briefing room. And not to go down another rabbit hole, but you could contrast that with today's briefing room was largely about Epstein, which their messaging on that has been terrible.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Epstein thing. Messaging or not, it's a tough situation for him to be in, but it's actually something that has turned a lot of people against him based on the idea that they're not going to be transparent, or they say they've already been as transparent as they possibly can be, which doesn't satisfy a lot of the different critics, myself included, I guess. So when we talk about the Epstein taking the driver's seat and the narrative of what's happening with the White House right now, it's certainly not what they would want because they have the rescission and they're looking more economic. But this is the thing that's going to be driving the conversation, I think, moving forward until it's settled. And I don't even know if it'll ever be settled. It sounds like they're just trying to push this back.
Yeah, their attitude of let bygones be bygones does not work when you're talking about child sex trafficking. I think that's one thing everybody on all sides of the aisle can agree on. And there's just this fundamental arrogance to how they're handling this. You know, the president coming out and saying, well, I don't, you know, if you're somebody calling for transparency that was once one of my supporters, I don't want you as a supporter anymore. That's, I mean, that really struck me as incredibly arrogant and incredibly dismissive of what happened here. And we've got people, you know, some of his most staunch supporters, people, you know, Joe Rogan's endorsement really sealed the election for him. Laura Loomer, who he's taking advice from on various issues. These are people that he listens to and have been stalwart supporters of him. And even they're telling him that you need to reverse course. And he's stubbornly refusing to do that. And it's really, I mean, we could theorize why this is happening. But it's really just falling flat with the American people, and they don't want to recognize that, or they just don't care.
You know, and remember back in the 80s and 90s, they made it sound like in media, or at least when you watch a movie or television, that quicksand was going to be a big problem. Everyone's going to run into quicksand sometime in their life. And of course, no one ever runs into quicksand. It's just a tool that they use in order to further a plot point of normally a pretty poorly made television show. This is quicksand for Donald Trump and the administration. They have all these other things going on, and they are self-imposing standing in this quicksand, sinking while they're trying to grab onto these other things that they're working on right now. He needs to realize, I think at least, as many politicians do, that it's not too late to reverse course and just say, you know what, whatever, let's do the special prosecutor to look into this, because I if you really think there's something there, we'll try one more time, but I don't see it, but let's do it. At least kick the football down a little bit, because right now he is sinking, it seems like.
Well, and the sinking is all self-inflicted. You know, how this erupted was a reporter's actually a friend of mine, asked a relatively benign question of Pam Bondi and Jeffrey Epstein, and, you know, about alleged ties to intelligence. It was a relatively benign question, and the president just blew up on it. And that raised everybody's eyebrows of how angry the president got over what was a basic question. It was a fair question. And it just struck me as, it struck everybody as over the top for what he did, for what that question was. But also where the Epstein thing will hurt him is the Epstein issue alone is causing damage. But you tie that into a lot of campaign promises the president has made that he's starting to backtrack on. He's going to release the Epstein files. Now he's not. We're not going to send. We're tired of sending money and weapons to Ukraine. Now we're sending weapons to Ukraine. I don't want to get America involved in foreign adventures. Now we're bombing Israel. We're bombing Iran at the behest of Israel. So all of that is starting to add up with people wondering, well, why is he backtracking on so many campaign promises?
Yeah. And, you know, I think with the Epstein stuff, his defense is you're just going to have to believe me on this one, because if we're going to say it's a waste of time, we're being honest with you. People aren't trusting government when it comes to Epstein. So that's going to be that's a tough sell, number one.
And just to your point there, it's a tough sell to the American people, because President Trump has made a career and won two elections based on not trusting government and promising to make government more trustworthy and taking a wrecking ball to government sort of being arrogant with the people and not telling them stuff. That was what he based. That's his whole political career has been based at. And now he's doing a complete 180 just over Jeffrey Epstein, which is that a hill anybody wants to die on? But apparently he does.
Yeah. If you're playing baseball and let's say you put up 15 runs and at the end of the game, you lose. This is the thing that would cause you to lose after putting up that many runs. You'd be like, how in the world can you lose after putting up 15 runs on the board? Right. So that's what it seems like. Don't do this. There's so many other good things going on that he can continue down the path. But can I give you a hypothetical as a journalist? Sure. And you can tell me how you would handle a situation like this, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
There's a lot of skepticism about this. And when there is skepticism and it's in the news, someone might say, okay, I'm a whistleblower. Let's say someone reaches out to you and says, I have information about the Jeffrey Epstein case. No one else knows this. I want to tell my story. How do you handle a situation like that if someone approaches you like that?
It would depend. I mean, we'd have to verify what their story is. We would ask for collaboration. We would ask for witnesses. We would ask for how they know what they know. I mean, we would do some digging to try to find out and try and determine the best we can how credible their information is.
Does that happen a lot? People reach out to you saying they have information?
Yes, and sometimes it is incredibly credible, and sometimes it isn't. I mean, it's a surprising mix. I think you'd be surprised about how evenly that is split between the two.
Wow, interesting. And I think about that, and I think there are a lot of people that want to tell their story, but they want to stay anonymous, which is a hard thing to do sometimes when it's a big story like this, which probably is one of the reasons why some people don't want to come forward. They say it's not worth the hassle for the world to hate me, or at least half the world to hate me.
And I think you can almost link that to this administration's attitude. If you're not going to get justice, if there is going to be no justice, why come forward? You know, that's the other thing I don't like about their attitude towards this is that they're discouraging people who could come forward with credible information to come forward because it's just going to get their perception is it's just going to get buried.
Yeah. You know, this is another plot point that you see on television shows, but I don't know how often this happens in real life. Have you ever been compelled to try to give up a source for a story? Does that happen where a judge tries to force you to give up information you don't want to give up?
It's rare. I do have a friend in the 90s who went to jail for refusing to give up a source in Texas, but wow. It's rarer than you would think. It's rare.
Right. One other story that is kind of interesting that Donald Trump brought up was Adam Schiff and mortgage fraud in the Department of Justice referral. Let's talk about that story for a moment, because this is kind of this could be a really big story. What do you think's going on here?
Yeah, it could be. And it's a cut and dry case. That's what I think is so interesting. And there's a couple of points with this. It's a very cut and dry mortgage fraud, whether it's anybody, whether it's the senator from California or just some guy who lives down the street from me. It's very cut and dry. It's did you fill out these forms and did you put this information down and is this information accurate? It's really just that simple. And for your listeners who don't know, Adam Schiff is senator from California, so he represents California, has a home in Burbank. Also bought a home in Potomac, Maryland, I think in 2009, I believe. Used that, obviously, because he was in the House of Representatives at that time representing California. He put down that the Maryland home was his primary residence, and then, which you do if you own two residences, you get a break. You'll get a mortgage break on your primary residence because if it's a vacation home, an income property, you get a steeper mortgage than you would if it's just a house you and your family are going to live in. So to get the break, he declared that his primary residence. Then on tax forms, he could get a tax break of $7,000 if he declared his Burbank home his primary residence. So suddenly the Burbank home was the primary residence. But the thing is with mortgage fraud is those cases usually get settled quickly. There's very rarely is it their jail time. It's you pay a fine, you pay restitution to the bank, and then you have some sort of consent decree promising you'll never do it again and you'll face different penalties if you do. What I find interesting is it's essentially a technical violation. And if you want to compare that, President Trump convicted on those 34 felony counts in New York, that was also a technical violation. That was also a business fraud case in which forms were not filled out to the level that prosecutors thought they should have been filled out to. And it's interesting that you have Adam Schiff here cheering the prosecution of President Trump when he's essentially almost doing the same thing, according to the criminal referral to the Justice Department.
Yeah. And again, I'm just going to mention this as broadly speaking, because I'm just curious how this works on a bigger scale. And I know we're running close to time. Do you have a couple minutes?
I got time. Yeah.
Okay. a lot of people speculated. They pointed the signs to Adam Schiff as the person that may have been leaking this Russiagate information to the media in order to try to further this narrative. A lot of people pointed to Adam Schiff. It was never proven, but there's a lot of telltale signs that it was probably him, but we may never know. So let's say, hypothetically, you as a journalist have a high-profile politician that reaches out to you with information. Do they go through the same level of scrutiny as an anonymous source when you're trying to do their backstory?
The answer should be yes, but in most cases it's no, because that person has achieved a level of credibility.
Right. And when you're someone like Adam Schiff, again, this is hypothetical because none of this was ever proven, but still, it made me wonder if that same level of that same process would have been fulfilled when I saw Adam Schiff's name, because I thought, okay, maybe Donald Trump thinks the same thing, and maybe this is his way of saying, you know, I gotcha.
Yeah. It very well it could, because one thing we can expect from the, if this ends up being criminal charges being filed, that I would expect a Trump Justice Department will overcharge here. They will try to reach for a couple of charges that we would not expect. To use the example of the guy down the street filling out mortgage forms inaccurately, Adam Schiff will probably face more charges, and we'll see what happens. Nobody ever gets jail time for mortgage fraud. I mean, it takes a lot to do that. So I don't expect he would get jail time. I think this is going to focus on, even with the Trump administration not wanting to cut him a break, it's still going to result in fines and penalties and some kind of plea deal. Most of these cases are pled out anyway. That's assuming he did something wrong and they pursue a criminal investigation, obviously.
Jeff Murdock, White House correspondent for The Washington Times. If people wanted to look you up or reach out to you, where can they go?
They can always reach me at Jeff Murdock on Twitter. And then I'm always at The Washington Times. My email address is at the bottom of every story. So feel free to write and say hi.
Fantastic. Jeff Murdock, again, thank you for joining us and entertaining some of these hypotheticals.
Always. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Happy to be with you here today. We got a couple more segments, including 40 minutes worth. And Dave Simmons, host of the KMOX Dollars and Cents show, is going to join us a little bit later in the hour. I have a story for Ethan, our producer, coming up after the break. It's a crazy story. I want to get his thoughts on this. And if you are not watching on the live video right now, you should, because you want to see his reaction, his face when I tell him this story. Coming up, go to the Mark Reardon show page on YouTube and go watch it now. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.